welcome to the Advanced Practice Weekly Podcast from the London Faculty of Advancing Practice. This week we are joined by our special guest Lucy Cooper from Birmingham. Lucy, can you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Lucy Cooper. I'm an advanced nurse practitioner based at Birmingham Children's Hospital. I work in clinical research and I work in the clinical research facility, which is NIHR basis. And I work with children of all specialities doing research in clinical trials.
Amazing. So you've come to our attention because there's a forum out there, a research forum that you chair. So I'd love to hear about that and kind of what exactly it is and who can join.
Yeah, so back in 2018, Lorraine Turner did a scoping exercise throughout the UK looking for other ACPs that were working in clinical research. Initially working in a clinical research facility, and we identified five of us throughout the UK, some adult and some paediatric ACPs. And that's how the forum was initiated. And since then, it's grown and grown. We have 20 plus members now, which is still small numbers, but great representation for the UK.
Brilliant. So obviously started at five, and like you say, that's a really small number, and that's across the UK. How many are part of the forum now?
So there's 20 plus of us now. So we did another scoping exercise last year, and we've widened the membership out to those that don't have to have a nursing background. So it's anybody that's working in advanced clinical practice. And we've had lots of interest over the last 12 months from people that are working in clinical academia, as well as just purely direct delivery of research in NHS trusts, for example.
Which is a really good sign that actually the research pillar of advanced practice is becoming more and more important, which is really nice to hear.
Definitely. There's so much momentum for research at the moment, probably sparked from the pandemic and people really now understanding the power of research and what these roles can do and how important research is to conduct. So really, it was established to offer a platform for us. We're all in very unique roles spread out throughout the UK. So we wanted to provide some clinical and peer support for each other, because most of us were working in sort of isolation within the trust. Some of us were working in the same sort of geographical area and at the same trusts, but generally we were working quite on our own. So we wanted that peer support for each other, and we wanted to really start to promote the role. We could see the value of ACPs working in clinical research, and we thought it was really important to make sure that the wider research community and ACPs as a whole really understood what it was that we do, and the scope that was available to them as well, and also education for each other and sharing, as you know, sort of generating new roles within advanced practice. Everybody comes across these hurdles and stumbling blocks that make development of the role quite challenging, you know, changing in historical practices and things. So it was just the peer support really for that, that if I'd done something and had that experience, that I could share that knowledge throughout the rest of the ACPs in the UK. And we had some challenges that we probably couldn't all tackle on our own around good clinical practice and some of the things that historically in research have been undertaken by the medics and the principal investigators. And as the role has developed, they're roles that nurses and ACPs can take on. So we've got challenges ahead of us. And that's where we knew that we had to engage bigger stakeholders like the NIHR, MRHA, people like that, that were going to support us.
I think that's amazing. And it's also a testament that it doesn't matter what area you're working in, you're right, as ACPs, we always have these barriers to still break down and kind of roles to define and carve out, which is really interesting. So I think I'm very guilty of actually, I've never heard of your role previously until we'd spoken. So could you tell us exactly what a research ACP looks like and how your journey started there? Because I think a lot of people will be interested to hear about it, because you're more of a niche and a kind of a bit more of a niche speciality that, as you say, is increasing and coming up. But tell us about your role and your journey.
So initially qualified as a paediatric nurse and did my time on sort of surgical and the normal types of wards. And then when the clinical research facility opened at Birmingham Children's Hospital, which was the first paediatric CRF in the UK, I joined the team then as a research nurse and educationist. And then it became really quite evident that, you know, there's roles that nurses can undertake that, you know, are traditionally always been undertaken by medics. And this is where we, you know, started to scope out this idea of putting a nurse into the advanced practice training. So therefore, we can support research within the trust and the wider community of research. So I went and did my advanced practice training. And like we've just been saying, that, you know, the role was was mine to create. There wasn't any set JD or expectations, which makes it really, really difficult. And, you know, it's a long process to really define what it is, what your role is going to be, what are the needs of the service, what's the need of the patients. So that took a long time to carve out. And that's where the forum really, really helps, and helps others that are coming through as well, to be able to, you know, offer our support and our wisdom, if you like, from our previous years of doing the role. So over the years, it's developed the role. Now I can work as a principal investigator, sub-investigator on early phase Brilliant. Clinical drug trials, advanced therapy trials, and also sort of local academic projects working with local universities. So the role is really varied, and basically I can undertake the roles of a clinician. So it's really, really challenging, very varied. I work over multiple specialities, which is another challenge. Many of my colleagues will just work in oncology, for example, but I can be doing anything from endocrinology through to inherited metabolic, through to surgery, all in the same day. So so research is my specialty, but then have lots of subspecialities within that.
So you're really spanning the whole breadth of any specialty out there. And so kind of day to day, like obviously your role can be really varied, but kind of what does it look like? What exactly is your role? What do you do if you went into the office in the morning? How does your day start and what does that look like? What's the breakdown?
So throughout the day, we can have children that are coming in for a new infusion. So, a trial drug, and I will be the on-site sort of medical cover for that. So it can be prescribing the investigational medicinal product, making sure the patient is safe to continue on the trial, doing any specialised treatments, assessments, being on site for any emergency situations, so any anaphylaxis, anything like that. So it is really, really varied. I can do specialised administrations of intrathecal drugs. So it is really, really varied, and it depends on which protocols we get coming through the doors, if you like. So it could be that I'm running a clinic for screening for diabetes, through to, you know, first in the world drug that we're giving on the CRF for the first time.
Wow, I mean, that sounds to me totally terrifying, but equally so inspiring as well. So it sounds like you are literally in the throes of every part of the research. And do you kind of see different things through? So you're kind of there for the actual trials themselves, but in terms of what happens after you've conducted kind of the actual giving of the medication and the next steps?
Yeah, so it is all of it. So there is a large element of, you know, assessing whether a child that's presented with a headache, if that's caused by the drug, for example. So we do all of the safety assessments, documentation goes along with that, reporting of any serious adverse events, working closely with the pharmaceutical companies or the sponsor of the trials. And it is taking on all of those responsibilities that are usually taken on by the medical teams. And the advantage of our role is that we're a fixed entity. We can build up the rapport with the patients. We can provide that continuity. There's less waiting times, and it evaluates really, really well with the patients. Because you've got to remember, these children that I see, you know, they don't have to take part in research. It's not their usual standard of care. This is potentially over and above, or it could be the last treatment options. So it can be quite an emotive situation. So we can have children that are doing mm-hmm. it, say they have diabetes and they are giving an extra blood sample for, you know, screening, so they can learn more about a condition or a disease, through to their, you know, this is first in the world and they're the first person that's going to be having this drug, and, you know, the anxieties that can go with that. And it's about the wider management as well.
Absolutely. It feels kind of like incredibly gracious that you're actually supporting those people out there to give their time and their body and their research to be those people. I can imagine it's quite fearful having a drug for the first time in the world. It's really quite incredible. And I guess obviously we're quite well aware that normally in peds there's less research to kind of back treatments. And I guess this moves me on to, which is such a big question, but why is research beneficial? Well, you know, why is it so important that we're engaging in this process?
I think research as a whole, whether it's adult or paediatric research in any specialty, you know, it's the route to develop new treatment options for children. It's the, you know, it improves the way that we practice, improves the outcomes for patients. You know, it's just the route by which we can prevent illness, protect health, promote well-being, diagnose and manage some of these really rare conditions and more common conditions that we see in our population now. A lot of my work is around sort of rare conditions in children. You know, children are living a lot longer, so, you know, we can start to treat them at a lot earlier ages as treatment options are developing. So it is just a route to improving the healthcare, and that's ultimately what all of our goals is as healthcare providers, isn't it, is to improve the health and wealth of the whole of the nation.
Yeah, absolutely. And although your job looks really different to perhaps some other ACPs, you're right, that kind of broader goal is ultimately the same. As ACPs, I think we all worry about the research pillar. And I think, you know, I think it's really important that people have discussed it before, that you don't just kind of do a token audit just to kind of tick that box. The research pillar is actually incredibly important. And I'd love to hear your opinion on the research pillar and how people can kind of begin to engage in it in a bit more of a meaningful way, especially because there is that fear out there, I think, particularly as, you know, people that aren't medics, accessing it can feel a bit more like an outsider and a little bit more tricky.
Yeah, I think I've heard the term coined quite often, is the orphan pillar of advanced practice. Mm-hmm. And there is some sort of potentially tokenistic practice within that pillar of our advanced practice. But it is so important. The Chief Nursing Officers for England Strategic Plan for Research, you know, quite clearly, that was launched last year, actually sets out that, you know, nurses need to participate in and deliver research and get involved in research. It needs to be more than, and that's through all nursing, that's not just for ACPs. The advantage that ACPs have is that, you know, we are at the forefront of patient care whilst also being really highly educated and specialists mm-hmm. within our roles. We have direct access to patients. We're working clinically 90% of the time. You know, we're in that unique position and a fantastic mm-hmm. position to be able to see changes that need to happen, identify those unanswered questions, you know, see those better ways that we need to practice. We've all throughout our careers have all gone, well, why are we doing it that way? I think we could do it better this way. You know, and as ACPs, mm-hmm. we don't have to be doing, you know, first in the world drug infusions and, you know, very early phase clinical trials, but potentially it could be more than just a tokenistic audit or, you know, a tick in a box when we're doing our sort of supervision and our yearly reviews. And there's so many ways that people can get involved. You know, do people know what research is going on within their speciality? You know, can they get involved? We need to have, you know, good representation in research. We can't just have, you know, a set patient population that takes part in research. You know, this is where us that are out in the front line can be, you know, influencing those and giving opportunities for people to take part in research. Research, you know, they say that it should be offered and should be available to anybody that would like to take part. And, you know, you have to sort of ask yourself that question. Do I know what research is going on in my department? If a patient asked me, how can I take part in research or what research is on offer, would you be able to answer that? They're sort of the questions that you need to sort of ask yourselves to then think, okay, I'm in a privileged position here where I could get involved and work along, you know, some of the consultants that are doing work or other AHPs or other colleagues, you know, and you can work independently, collaboratively. There's so many options out there, but it really needs to, the mindset of research needs to shift from this sort of orphan pillar to something that isn't just something that a box ticking exercise or something that isn't within our capacity and capability to do.
I love the idea of actually just as a real good starter for everyone that isn't too intimidating, like you say, if a patient asked me what research was going on within my area in our trust, I think I would struggle to say. And I guess it's just, first of all, being a bit more involved in it. And it's kind of that expression, if you don't ask, you don't get. But if you don't ask what research is going on, you don't know. And that's just the beginning step to working out what's going on. Would you like to take part in it? Could you be involved in it? But I also loved the point that when you said, you know, we've all been in clinical practice and we said, why are we doing it like this? And I think loads of people can relate to this. I mean, in my job in frailty, all the time, a lot of the guidelines do not reflect our elderly population. And I guess it's, what am I doing to contribute to that? And currently I'm not. So what would your advice be to you? You've got like a bit of a frustrating question, or you kind of feel a bit frustrated by, like, why are we prescribing this medication, or why are we doing this treatment this way? What would your advice be to me? How can I pursue that? How can I kind of take that forward to the next step?
I think firstly, you know, speak to your colleagues, see if other people have got the same opinion as you. Speak to, you know, the wider community that also might be, you know, having these same sort of queries, whether that be in your trust or on a more national level. I'm sure, you know, most of us are involved in sort of speciality meetings where you could raise the questions, do some background reading to check, you know, what it is, what research is out there already. It could be something that is already being asked and you could get involved in. And then, you know, speak to your local research and development offices that are all in every trust, and just start to think about, you know, is this just an audit that, you know, I want to scope out a little bit. There's lots of funding streams available. There's lots of fellowships through like the NIHR, for example. And local trusts all have pots of money that I'm sure are available for small scale projects like this. So it is just about raising that awareness, working collaboratively, and just being more aware about research that, you know, we do have that mm-hmm. capacity and capability to improve change. You know, active research hospitals, you know, are known to have better healthcare outcomes for their patients. And again, it comes back to that, ultimately, that's what we're here for. It's to improve the health of our patients. And, you know, it's making sure that everybody's got that equal opportunity to take part mm-hmm. in research. And why should mm-hmm. it be a certain geographical area that, you know, has better options through research than smaller boroughs, for example? So, you know, it's just making sure that, you know, you're giving the best possible care to your patients, and by asking the right questions, because if you've thought it, then somebody else probably has as well.
Yeah, and I think that's also a really true statement, isn't it? I also really like the point about, you know, making research more equal, and I think that's really important. So what have you found historically with research, and I guess how do you think research can foster equality going forward? Because I think it's a really important topic, and it's really interesting to see that that's filtering through into research as well.
Yeah, so, you know, when you're doing research, it needs to be representative of the populations that we're serving. And, you know, if it's the same type of patient groups that are offered, or there's only, you know, say for oncology, where, you know, a lot of research happens, why should their treatment and their care progress further than dermatology, for example, where there may not be as much research going on? So that's why it's really important that we advocate, you know, and promote research. Ask questions, ask why your clinical leads aren't doing research, you know. So it's making it equitable, and that every patient group has got the opportunity, you know, like you were saying, Natalie, that in frailty, that, you know, it's not an area that sees a high proportion of research, but why should that population be disadvantaged by not having new treatment options or the best ways to practice because there's not much research? You know, what can we do as a professional group to increase that capacity of research that's happening in the UK? We need to be leading in the UK and leading change and new treatments, new ways of working. And by research, we can do that. But it's about everybody taking a little bit of ownership, really, as that responsibility. You know, most nurses, JDs of whatever band you are, will have an element of research within it. But, you know, it's just making it real for people and making believable that, you know, we can all play a little part. Even if it's just knowing what research is happening in your trust or within your speciality, and giving people information to, you know, or referring them on to the relevant people that are conducting that research, therefore giving them equity to take part if they wish to.
And I guess that's the thing, even if you're not conducting the research yourself at that point, if you're giving someone the option to be involved in it, that's another kind of, you know, you could be completely changing their lives or people's lives in the future, whether that's because you decide not to fund a certain treatment or because you do. And I guess I really like the point that you have a responsibility to represent your population, and whether that is, you know, determined by race, gender, you know, frailty, yeah, whether it's kind of conditions. It's about actually it representing people out there, and not a niche group of people that you decide to do research on, because that's kind of not necessarily as effective as what it needs to be if it's not representing the people that you're treating, which I think is really important. And I guess, you know, there's a lot of areas where we know people aren't typically represented in research, as you know, there's a lot of areas in terms of like women's health,
exactly,
and people of like non-Caucasian, exactly, ethnicity that are not fairly represented. So I think, again, if we want to start kind of making a difference here, like you say, we have a responsibility to get involved in research and to involve people from all different areas and backgrounds so that the research represents them and we can give them better treatments.
Exactly. So my colleague who works in Manchester is looking at breast oncology, and she's working out in the community and is trying to increase the referral rates into the hospital to take part in research from those hard to reach groups, you know, those people that wouldn't necessarily usually engage in research, so from different ethnic minorities, from underserved areas. And that's just really important. We can't just have a very sort of stereotypical population that's taking part in research or is offered research. So she's doing a big piece of work up in Manchester looking at how we can get people into research from the community in, which is really important.
That's really exciting to hear. And it would be lovely to share that piece of work. So like as ACPs, as you say, we can begin to be more responsible for our role in research, because as you say, it shouldn't be the orphan pillar. It should be kind of more strong within there. But I think we do feel underconfident.
Yeah. And it's not about having to be a clinical academic. You know, we don't need to be, you know, applying for big grants. You know, it is just, you know, what we can do on a local level and just getting research out there and just using our unique opportunities that were presented by us just in our day-to-day jobs,
which is great because then it doesn't sound quite so scary. But I also love the idea that if you do want to take it forward, I guess I didn't even realize about research and development offers.
Yes, the National Institute of Health Research, they are a stakeholder within research, and they offer some fantastic opportunities for nurses and AHPs, and they offer everything from sort of pre-PhD type work through to postdoc fellowships and internships and pots of money that are available for us as a training and to develop your research skills and to undertake some projects. It's known to be underrepresented by nurses in these types of fellowships and these awards, which again is a real shame, really, because we do have questions that are asked and the skills to be able to do it. So it's just about promoting that and knowing what is out there, and every trust's R&D department would be able to support and point them in the right directions of where funding opportunities are for training and to deliver and to prepare research.
Brilliant. That's really amazing. What do you think the next steps are for within the research ACP profession, especially considering the good clinical practice document? And can you tell me more about that document for people that haven't heard about it?
So firstly, good clinical practice, or GCP as it's known, is like our Bible. It tells us how to ethically provide research. So, you know, making sure that consent is informed. So it covers many principles in research that guides us and makes sure that research is ethical and fair and equal for all. So within that, a lot of GCP guidance is quite historical, and it doesn't always reflect modern day practices. So it will state things like medics or clinicians need to undertake consent, for example, or assess eligibility and causality. So if you've got a patient that presents with, say, a headache, has that got causal relationship to the drug that you've just given? So at the moment we have challenges that we need to continue to challenge about a non-medic being able to undertake those roles that historically and traditionally have always been undertaken by a medic. So that's really where our work is going. And we are working quite closely with the NIHR and Ruth Endicott, who is the director of nursing for the NIHR, to push these problems and issues forward, because there is inconsistencies about what we're allowed to do there's no rhyme or reason to it. So there are sort of challenges and where we're heading in the future. But we've got so much support from the NIHR and from the chief nursing officers and things like that we need to push this forward to make sure that the policies and procedures are reflective of the workforce that we have conducting research. We can't be saying that we want nurses to be undertaking research, getting involved, planning and delivering research if we're confined by the guidance that is out there.
So yeah, it's just you're right, it does seem quite dated, and it does seem like quite a good time to take it forward. And as you said, you've moved a lot of those traditional medic roles now to nurses in advanced practice, and you're also talking about how kind of more different professions are entering that. Do you think that's more challenging if you're from a non-nursing advanced practitioner background, and how are people beginning to kind of infiltrate and engage in that new space?
I think they probably would face the same sort of challenges as a nurse sort of ACP would do. It is just about breaking down these barriers and these traditions that have been there for so long that aren't really based on anything other than a doctor should just do it. And I think, you know, some areas of advanced practice have been around for a lot longer than ACPs and research have, and so they've just historically probably had exactly the same sort of challenges when they first set out, but we're perhaps just a few years behind some of the more established ACPs in other areas. I'm sure it will change, and it is. The momentum is growing. And because we're just sort of relatively small numbers, that's why we keep doing scoping exercises to make sure that we're getting everybody that is working in these roles or has an interest within their role to undertake research to join the momentum, because sometimes it's, you know, stronger in numbers. And if we're coming and presenting ourselves as, you know, when you come to do research in the UK, you will be presented with a non-medical workforce that is educated, trained and capable of undertaking the roles as a medic would do, then that's sort of our selling point, really. And that's what the support behind us is about.
Brilliant. And I guess this kind of comes back to the forum, doesn't it? And you know, the need to kind of, you can feel like you're quite isolated, but actually when you're connecting, and that might be internationally or nationally, using those other people's strengths and knowledge and abilities, you can actually overcome those barriers a little bit easier, would you say?
Exactly. You know, wherever geographically we've been based in the UK, we've all faced exactly the same problems at some point. So we know that it's not just a trust by trust generally issue. It is a wider issue that, you know, this is about how research is delivered and thought about in the UK. And this is what we're trying to challenge at the moment.
So for those working in clinical research, how can they join the forum?
You can get in touch with myself or Lorraine Turner, who is, and then we will have a quick meeting with you, have a chat through, and then you'll be welcomed into the group.
Amazing. So we'll post those, your email addresses or contact addresses, if that's okay, within the bio.
Yeah,
so
brilliant.
People can reach out, which is a really exciting opportunity. And for those that probably aren't quite on that level, have you got any kind of take home final summary messages to kind of start that kind of, and I guess also could we probably come back to audit as well, in terms of what is your advice for those just undertaking audits? Is there a way that we can take you to the next step? And just kind of bits of advice for people looking to, I don't know, work a little bit more on that pillar.
Yeah, so I mean, research audits are fantastic. They're a great starting point. You know, the questions that come out of an audit are potentially your research questions. So it's, instead of just doing an audit in isolation, it's making sure that, you know, you look at the data and the evidence that you found, and it's taking that then to the next step. What is it that this has demonstrated? What has it shown me? What more questions has it thrown up? And how can I, you know, challenge those questions? Is it through a research question? Is it through further audit? So it's just about not thinking of it in just in isolation, and thinking about, okay, what am I trying to achieve, and how can I improve healthcare from the findings in this?
So I guess sometimes maybe audit is almost like the first step, and that we shouldn't leave it there, because maybe actually that audit has done an amazing piece of work. But like you say, it's the next steps to it. And can we think of taking it one bit further, and what would that look like? And I guess as well, this doesn't have to be, it's not about, oh, I've ticked off this audit next year and then I'll do another audit next year, the year after. It could be that
exactly
along your professional career you're starting, yeah, with a question, and maybe over the next few years you're taking it forward in a different way. So it doesn't have to kind of, the story doesn't have to end there. Would you agree?
That's it, exactly. Yeah, don't just think of it in isolation, think of it potentially as a starting point, especially like we've said, you know, research is quite scary to many people. So break it down. Don't think of it as, you know, you've got to be doing a big early phase clinical trial by next week. You know, it is just about what we can all do locally and by collectively, you know, in joining forces as a professional group, we can achieve so much more than potentially what we are doing now. And there is a place for audits. There's a place for, you know, qualitative research, some quantitative research. It just depends on what your clinical area is and what questions that it is that you want to answer.
And I also really liked your idea of, if you're thinking it's someone else's and actually what are other people doing it? So if I did an audit and maybe I wanted to answer a question, I could actually speak to like maybe my trust that's down the road and said, have you done this audit too? And the likelihood is they might have done or wanted to do. And then all of a sudden you're looking at even a bigger picture, a bigger kind of cross sample of people involved. And already by combining that information, it's even a little bit more powerful.
Exactly.
And again, that could be the first next step you take as an ACP. So maybe you've been doing audits for a couple of years, you've thought a little bit about the so what, but maybe you could have a look at what everyone else is doing, gather those audits together, what's everyone else thought about it, discuss it at kind of an ACP forum, kind of drive it forward. Do you have any tips with kind of things that you've done in the past or encourage other ACPs to do or getting themselves out there to discuss that kind of work that they're doing?
You've got it spot on there, Nasi. To be honest, you know, we all are part of wider forums. You know, there's many networks out there that we can work together collaboratively. And like you say, one place has had the question. It could be that everybody's been doing it in isolation. Pull that data together and it becomes a lot larger picture, and there may be more evidence, more questions, and it's a better starting point. Within the NHS, there is data sitting there everywhere, you know, that is just not used, that could probably set a lot of people off on their journey, you know, to looking at a certain pathway. You know, there's lots of data there that just is unused, and that's why the NHS is quite unique in its healthcare system for research, that it is available to us. We've got, you know, patients that come in, we see them and there's data there. So that's your starting point. We don't actually probably have to go that far to look for it. And we've got all those questions. I'm sure all of us have asked throughout our careers, you know, the ifs and whys, and I would do it this way, but how would I do it that way? And collaborate.
There's so much potential, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. You know, yeah, there's ACPs throughout every trust really within the UK, and yeah, use your links, speak to people, ask questions, and that's just what it's about. It's just about raising that awareness that as a workforce, if we come as a strong unit, we can achieve quite a lot, and just ultimately it's for the patients, isn't it? And that's what we're here for.
So I guess, you know, we talk about let's not work in silos, but I guess realistically a lot of us are still working in a silo. And as you said, it's about coming together. And I think maybe making it a priority, and I think it's really easy to not make it a priority, but if you frame it in a way that actually I'm going to this ACP forum, why don't I make it my objective this year that I'm going to take the research pillar, for example, a bit more to the forefront than perhaps I would my management pillar or my education pillar, because maybe you do a lot of that already. So actually, you know, for this year, you know, on PDR, actually I'm going to bring it a bit more forward and maybe take a few people with me. And it's when you start talking about it like this that it becomes less kind of daunting and it becomes a bit easier to engage with, and then kind of seeing where it could take you. So I guess maybe again, ACP forums, it doesn't just have to be like your forum when you're kind of very much involved in national research, but actually kind of communities of practice, things like journal clubs, things like that. Again, starting that process more, getting more involved and improving patient care.
Exactly. So sort of within my trust ACP forum, you know, I keep going on about research, and there's people now that are, you know, slowly building that momentum and they're enjoying research. And some of the ACPs working in intensive care, for example, you know, are looking at applying for fellowships and are taking time out and are building up their own projects. So, you know, it's just about sparking that interest in people. And I think that's exactly how you described it when we talked last time, Natalie, that, you know, it was just made people think. And that's sort of what my ultimate role today is just to make people think a little bit about how they can just, think about their the research pillar a little bit more seriously, and give it the same worth as the other four.
Definitely. And I think maybe seeing our careers as a little bit like, you know, like Rome wasn't built in a day, and like you expand your scope all the time and you take focus in different areas, and sometimes it takes you down a different route for a little while, and you know, sometimes you have secondments and it kind of all looks very different. And I guess it's bringing research along that journey, like you said, people are like getting grants and going into it. It doesn't have to always be as central, but equally sometimes it can also come to the forefront a bit more, and like realizing that it's an option that can drive it through.
That's it, you know. And it can just be, you don't even have to be doing the research yourself. It could be, you know, if you're doing your clinic and you know about research that's happening, it's just informing your patients about it, and then, you know, you're giving referrals into research, so therefore you're increasing the research activity in your trust as well as giving your patients more options.
That's been super, super interesting. I guess, so next steps for people is they can find you on the forum, they can be started beginning to engage in with it more, and start taking it and talking about it to their colleagues. Have you got any final thoughts that you could add in for those people looking to improve on that pillar?
I think just like we said, take it step by step, just start to consider it. We're seeing patients day in, day out. Everybody has got the right to take part in research and should be offered research. And we know that research active hospitals can have better outcomes for our patients. And ultimately, you know, we're here to improve healthcare, you know, identify new treatments, promote well-being, diagnose and manage conditions better. And we can have a real part to play in that bigger picture.
Brilliant. And I think what you just said basically sums up perfectly in ACP anyway. So it really does sound that ACPs are the perfect people to be engaging in research.
Exactly. It's nothing over and above what we should be doing. And I think it's just...
No, exactly.
It's a reminder to people that, you know, not for it to be that underprivileged pillar, and it has equal worth as the others.
Absolutely, definitely. Lucy, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And again,
thank you.
Lucy's aim is just to get you thinking about that. So even if it's kind of sparked a little bit of interest, and kind of hold on to that and see where you can take it. So thank you so much for your time.
Pleasure. Thank you.
So thank you so much for listening. And any questions, please find us on Twitter or head over to the website to find our contact details.